Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up. I am your host, Luke Coulson. Every guest we have does a little giggle there because now I'm using the F word even more when I say the title of the show. I like it a lot. And our guest today, I'm your host, Luke Coulson. Our guest today is George V. Gonzalez. Hi, George.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so good. Thanks for having me. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, and for our listeners, I rescheduled this particular one about 76 times. So the fact that we're actually here talking is a small miracle. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, George. We have a podcast all about guests coming on and discussing surviving life-changing events and experiences. And we have guests on every week and we have a good old chat for about 30 to 40 minutes. It can be an ongoing experience. It can be a one-off event. It can be stuff that happened when you were younger. It can be childhood traumas. It can be grown-up traumas. It can be psychological. It can be mental. It can be physical. There can be accidents, diagnosis. Goodness gracious me, we've had everything and everyone and anything. And it always comes down to the journey, right? The journey through the event or the experiences that took place. So with that, George, where would you like to begin?
I think we should start at the very beginning.
I love it. We once had a guest on who started before the beginning because she said she was born from the stars. And so she wanted to talk about her birth in the universe. So that was interesting. Let's start at your beginning.
So my beginning, I try to go back to the foundation of what I'm trying to build. So my foundation and my reason why was what many people call it is when my grandfather migrated from Mexico to United States under a work agreement with the United States. It was called the Bracero Program.
Yeah.
And so basically my grandfather had barely gotten married to my grandmother. They had a child already was 1 year old and a small infant. And he came to the United States and he left my grandma back home.
Oh, wow.
So he came to work. So that was a huge sacrifice for him and my grandmother.
Wow.
And when I first heard that in my early teens, it made me emotional. It made me humbled of the opportunities that I had here based on the sacrifice that my grandparents did for me, for us. And when I say for us, as far as his grandkids, that they didn't even know yet.
Of course.
Some of his children weren't even born yet and didn't really realize the impact it would have.
And George, where are you based now? Where are you calling us from?
I'm actually in California.
Nice.
Southern California.
Same.
Yeah, this is where I still live in the same city my grandfather settled in when he first came to the United States.
That is incredible, isn't it? And so what an amazing sacrifice that he did in order to kind of save the family, right?
Yes. Wow. Yeah, definitely, because he was an orphan.
Wow.
So he knew how rough life would be.
Yeah.
And when he saw that opportunity, he just went for it. He took it because he wanted to give his family a better life than the life that he had growing up and exposed to.
And I think the gist of it is, obviously, you can earn more money in the US and it goes further in Mexico. Is that fair to say? So if you can't,
absolutely.
So if you can come over here and get a job, you can send money back to your family. And that's what still to this day, many, many people do. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And what he did is because he was sending money back home. And back then when he was here, I mean, they were making a lot of money compared to what they were making over there.
Yeah.
So he was sending money back home and he was buying plots of land in Mexico.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. I have a friend in London. His His parents were Indian and they came to London, and Indian being an even like a third world country at that, this was 20, mm-hmm. 30 years ago. And they had a steady job, and they owned a couple of stores, and the money they were sending back to India was literally like millions of dollars, like the equivalent.
Yeah.
Their family, that by the end were living in this palatial homes with drivers and you know, and they just had a regular standard job in the UK, which is extraordinary. Not saying that is how it goes for everyone, by the way, but you know, it's an extraordinary thing.
It's funny that you say that, because there was a point in early part of my grandfather's life where he actually had a driver, because he didn't drive.
Wow.
You know, so that when I first heard that, I'm like, wait a minute.
So when did you...
That's it sounds like a movie.
It's like a movie. It probably should be made into a movie. When did you learn about that sacrifice? Like, when were you made aware of like your background and your family's background and how you had come to be in the United States?
That was probably like in my mid-teens when I first heard about it.
That's quite late, isn't it?
Yeah, it changed my way of thinking as far as family and family values and sacrifice. I'm like, oh my God, my family really is sacrificing a lot of things for me and my siblings and our lineage.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, that's incredible. So yeah, talk to me about what happened next.
So I use that as a foundation for anything that I'm doing, anything I'm working on, any adversity that I have to face. Mm. I remember that sacrifice, and nothing compares to leaving your own country completely somewhere else. Mm. So when my grandfather came here, he was like 21, 22 years old. Mm. When my daughter was 22 years old, I looked at my daughter and I'm like, oh no, it would be heartbreaking for my daughter to leave to another country to feed her family.
Yeah.
So that's when I really, really is like, oh my God, this is a lot more, what's the word, impactful than I thought of my early part of my life.
Mm.
You know, so I've always used that. And a lot of us, we go through a lot of things in life, of course, you know, but when we have something to really compare it to and you really utilize as a foundation and not use life as an excuse to give up, most of the times it's easier to get out of those difficult and dark situations.
So that is, that's kind of about perspective, isn't it? Right. So we talk about this a lot on the podcast, and it's like someone's idea of like the end of the world, or I can't cope with this, or, you know, it's like that glass half full, glass half empty. Now, obviously everyone's different, right? Everyone is completely different. But for you to have that as a benchmark, I understand where you're coming from. It's like, well, it's not as bad as that, or I don't have to make a sacrifice as bad as that, or my way out of this is nothing like that person's way out of this, right? So it's all about putting things into perspective and building off on that. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. And then I also use that as I'm going to honor my grandparents. I'm going to honor their sacrifice. So not only did I'm not going through what they went through and they would sacrifice, but I'm going to use that as I'm going to honor them and not give up.
That's
so they can be proud of me.
That's lovely. That is, isn't it? Talk about giving yourself a reason and like a drive. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? What did that look like for you then growing up into your teens and out of your teens and work-wise and life? And how did that go for you?
You know, because I was using it in that manner as a foundation, everything was going great. I was in a 20-year career job in distribution, logistics, and warehouse management for a long time. Mm. The money was great. The lifestyle was great. I had everything I've ever wanted, you know. And one day I had an accident. You know, I fell and I dislocated three discs in my back.
Oh, shit.
One on my lower spine, one in my mid spine, and one in my neck. It disabled me for 3.5 years. I couldn't walk. I couldn't sit. I couldn't lay down. I mean, it was just horrible. I was heavily medicated.
Wow.
I went into a deep depression. I saw the evil parts of the world because I was so medicated.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And I had suicidal thoughts. And then one day I was just sitting there. I'm like, is this it?
Oh, my goodness.
Is this really the bottom?
Yeah.
Is this really all he has?
Yeah.
It doesn't have the power to destroy me. This is it?
Yeah.
And that's when I started looking at, okay, what made allowed me and helped me survive before this? Thinking about my grandparents, thinking about my parents, thinking about at that time I already had my daughter with me. And I'm like, okay, well, if this is the bottom, if this is it, the only thing that can happen from here is I'm gonna be able to create and recreate and reinvent myself.
Wow.
That's the only thing that's gonna happen from here. Yeah. So I got off the medication. My mind started getting cleared up. I started doing like natural things to heal my body and ease the pain with herbs and stuff like that. And to get me in a clear mind of thinking.
Mm.
And then that's when I heard this voice that said real estate.
Mm.
And I actually became a real estate agent because I couldn't go back into my previous career because I can no longer do the manual functions that I was able to do before.
Yeah.
Because I was disabled.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh my
God. And that was, that allowed me to get into real estate. And the reason I got into real estate was because I was actually involved in real estate since I was 14 years old, doing kitchen and bathroom models and rehabs and doing Amazing. Work with my dad and my uncle.
Yeah.
So I used that as the foundation for my new career as far as a real estate agent. Wow. So I literally reinvented myself with my previous experiences.
So we need to unpack this because you've told this extraordinary journey and this story in about 73 seconds. And I want to ask you some questions because this is it. This is why we're here. This is the journey I'm talking about. Like, we have listeners that are recovered, right? Or they're on a road to recovery, or they're out of the darkness, or they're depressed, or they've had an accident, or... But we also have listeners that are in it. They're in a really bad spot, you know, and we have this lovely community of people that get in touch and they say, I heard this episode and I've, funnily enough, I interviewed a chap 3 weeks ago and he was in a car accident and he had to lie flat for a year, right? Yeah. So if you don't mind, can we go back to the accident and just take it a bit step by step? Because what's that look like? You're going about your everyday, right? And it's we hear this, people, they're just sideswiped by something that they just were never expecting. Was that a fall at work or what happened there?
Yeah, it was definitely a fall at work.
Mm.
And I wasn't expecting it, like you said. It just got me in the side. I'm like, wait a minute, what is this?
Yeah.
And then I went to the hospital. They got me checked out and said, look, this is what you have. I'm like,
bloody hell.
Well, that's not good. I was 39 years old.
Yeah, that's the prime of your life. You're fit as a fiddle.
Exactly, and I was physically fit. I was working out.
Yeah,
I was well fit. You know? And but what I did realize is that had I not been fit, and had I not been working out on my core, I probably would have broke my back.
Yeah. Different story.
Been completely disabled for the rest of my life.
Well, that's right. There is a different perspective, isn't it? Like the way you're talking is. You had this thing happen to you, and we'll get into this 3 years, which sounds like a fucking nightmare, quite frankly. But you're right. I have a friend who's not far from here, is a neighbor, and he was surfing, and he broke his back. They got hit by a wave, dumped him on the thing. He's paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of his life, like forever. And you're just a friend. He was like enjoyed motorcycling, and we'd see him at the cafe, and now he's forever in a wheelchair. And he has to have a crane to put him up. And so you flip it, right? And even he has a positive perspective most times because he's like, well, I'm still here, you know?
Yeah.
So when they told you these things that were wrong with you, did they give you an idea of the recovery process? And were you in chronic pain right off the get-go?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The pain was definitely extreme.
Neck and back pain is... horrendous, yeah, isn't it?
I couldn't even move my neck.
Oh my gosh.
Like I said, I couldn't even sit down, lay down. I'm like, so what am I supposed, how am I supposed to manage myself
supposed
here
to be,
with medication? Exactly. So that's what they pumped me up with, all this medication. And then they told me that I would never be able to exercise again.
Bloody hell.
And then they told me that I probably would never be able to carry things.
Bloody.
And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I have an only child. I don't have grandkids yet. Are you telling me that I'm never going to be able to carry my own grandkids?
Oh my God.
So it was pretty devastating. And that's pretty what I went into this whole depression because I felt like my life was pulled away from me.
I totally understand. I completely understand where you're coming from. For me, mine was a mental thing. Like I had a complete like mental episode, like a breakdown. And it felt like everything like in my whole life wasn't real. And and it took me a long time to recover out of that physical stuff, like what you're explaining. It's horrible. And is there a point where I don't know if you want to talk about like belief or faith or anything, but at some point you're resentful because why has this happened to me? Like there must have been moments where you're lying there thinking, why me?
I wasn't resentful.
Ah, okay.
But before the accident, I was, because I had already invented a batting machine for baseball and softball, so I'm an inventor.
Huh.
And I was sitting in the break room having my breakfast, and I looked at the window, and I was like, God, is this it for me?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
You gave me this invention a couple years ago, and here I am. And I've been able to do anything with it. And 2 weeks later, I had my accident.
Oh, my gosh. That's so really interesting.
Be careful what you ask for sometimes, yeah. Right? But at the same time, I wasn't mad. I wasn't bitter. I wasn't mad at him.
Right.
I was trying to find the lesson in it. I was trying to find the positive. And I knew that before this accident, other things in my life that had happened to me would always catapult me forward in some way, shape, or form. And I believe that at that time, there was some useful, that event was going to be useful in some way. I just didn't know what it looked like yet. But now being able to talk about it and helping people cope with their devastating, life-changing events is beneficial for them because I'm able to, I can't say, well, oh my God, I don't know what, I only if I knew what you were going through. No, I know what you're going through because I lived it too.
That's it.
You know, so it's That's relatable.
It. Yeah.
You know?
So let's talk about that. So what sort of meds are you on? Are you on like, they're putting on opioids and stuff like that for the pain, or is not quite that heavy or more or less?
They gave me the strongest stuff that they can give me. Wow. They first gave me something that wasn't working and they had to up the dosages.
Oof.
But it came to the point where I started seeing like,
oh my God,
black spiritual evil stuff that I wasn't supposed to
see. Oh my gosh.
You know, because we're not supposed to have access to this stuff, but that's what medication does to you.
Yeah.
It opens up the veil and you see shit that you're not supposed to see.
Oh my God. So that's dark.
You know?
That's dark. Exactly. And then they had to take you off that? Did you tell them that you were hallucinating with these things?
Yeah, I mean, but I was in such pain. I'm like, what are we supposed to do here? Either you're in pain or you're not in pain.
Oh, this is my a side effect. God, that's horrible.
So when people say, oh my God, I see shit, I'm like, first of all, what are you taking?
Yeah.
Because you don't have the authority to see unless you force that veil open.
Yeah.
And that's when you see stuff that you're not supposed
to. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's why I went into depression. That's why I had suicidal thoughts. I would hear things and whatnot. I would see things. I'm like, no. Now, I wasn't scared, though.
Interesting.
I felt like I was protected.
Yeah.
But I was still able to see these things. And the suicidal thoughts that would come in, I'm like, no, I'm not listening to that.
That's amazing.
That's not God talking to me.
Yeah.
This is the demonic whatever crap you want to talk about and stuff like that. I'm not dealing with that.
Wow.
So I felt safe in that area. But I know that I wasn't supposed to be there. I knew that.
Yeah.
And I knew that I wasn't supposed to see it. But at the same time, I felt like, okay, there's a reason why I'm here. And this is again why I was able to say, wait a minute, if this is the bottom here. And it can't take me out because it's telling me to take myself out. That's not going to happen. That means from here, it's all positive. Yeah. It's all up from here.
Yeah.
And that's when I decided to make the decision to get off the medication.
Wow.
So I guess I had to be in that place to see it, to know it, to be able to relate to other people in the future. And that's the lesson that I took from it.
That's bloody amazing. And you said that was about 3 years into the medication.
I was disabled for 3.5 years.
Bloody hell.
And half of that journey was in that journey.
Oh my God. Talk to me about your family around you. How was it for them? How was it for people seeing you in this state? Like how was that?
The internet selfies were kind of popular back then, right?
Yeah.
So I was trying to show how strong I was.
Understood.
Because of everything that I was going through. So I was taking selfies and whatnot, you know, with my daughter and whatnot. But some family members would tell me, you look depressed. I'm like, no, I'm not depressed.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to be strong for the family.
They can see it there, right?
But they can see it through me. But now if I go back and you know how social media gives you like memories and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'll see the pictures and I'll look at my eyes.
Yeah.
And oh my God, I see so much pain in those eyes.
It's crazy, isn't it? I see photos of me on Facebook like 7-8 years ago at a party or like at an event, smiling, and I was drinking like heavily alcoholic, right? And you can just see behind my eyes. It's just like help me. Do you know what I mean? It is crazy, isn't it?
It's true what they say that The window to the soul is through the eyes.
Yeah.
That is so true. Because when I saw, like you said, like I saw my eyes, I'm like, wow. I can see now that I was going through it.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew I was going through it, but I thought I was shielding and protecting other people to not know the pain that I was going through.
Because
sometimes the person that I am is I suffer in silence.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't bring anybody into my problem.
Yeah.
I've never done that.
Yeah. Same. Same. But, so, wow. That's just fascinating.
But if you're weak and you hurt yourself, that's a bad thing.
Yeah. That's how I used to think as well.
But if you're strong and you know that you're not going to hurt yourself, that's you to protect them.
Yeah.
Not realizing that they want to help you, but you just don't want to involve them.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? So talk to me about the beginning of the recovery then. You say to yourself, I don't want to do this anymore. Like at this moment of rock bottom, as you described it, what does the beginning of the way out of this rock bottom look like for you?
The beginning of that was, it was almost like I was reborn again.
Mm.
Coming off the medication, having the clear mind,
wow,
and hearing that voice to get it to rip, that said real estate.
Mm.
So I called up my buddy. I got I went to the coursework of getting my real estate license and whatnot,
mm.
and then I passed my real estate test. I'm like, oh my God, it was like an emotional thing. Mm. I'm like, it feels like I'm getting my life back in some way, shape, or form. Mm. Right?
Mm.
I'm still disabled.
Yeah.
I still can't carry a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I wheel my laptop. I don't carry my
You're
laptop.
Still in pain as well, I'd imagine.
I'm not in pain because I'm able to take certain things.
Got
like
it.
I take glucosamine to lubricate my joints.
Got it.
I take protein shakes. I stretch my back
Just
every single day.
Hard,
if not, I can't
Off the
function.
Hard stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I wear tennis shoes. I can't wear dress shoes.
Mm.
I can't go upstairs. I got to go through the elevator.
Wow.
So there's a lot of things that I had to change in my life. And I look like I'm going on a trip every time I get off my car because I'm rolling my laptop around.
Yeah.
Like, George, where are you going? It's my laptop. It looks like I'm going on a trip. But these are things that I had to do so I'm able to function somewhat normal.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
And then so I was able to get my real estate license, close my first 12 deals in my first 16 months. So that was really inspiring and motivating for me as well. And then during the pandemic in 2021, I was called to write my book.
Wow.
This thing hugged me.
Yeah.
This love, and just like, it's time to write the book. And I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
Everything is shut down. What do you mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then I felt it like this hug again. I'm like, give me like peace. No, it's time to write the book.
Wow.
And then I made the commitment to write my book. And I was going to call it American Inventor because I'm also an inventor.
Mm.
But that title is more for self.
Yeah.
Right? And then I heard this whisper again for the second time, and I knew whose voice that was again. And it said, answer the call.
Mm.
And then I heard it a second time. And I was on the phone with my publishing company because we were about to finalize the title of American Inventor.
Mm.
And then I said out loud, answer the call. And they asked me, George, what is that?
Mm.
That's the name of the book. Where did you get that? It was just whispered to me.
Wow.
And 2 weeks later, the meaning of Answer the Call came to me. Answer the Call is about finding your gifts, your talents, and pursuing your life's purpose. That's what Answer the Call means.
Wow.
And that's God's message to the world.
That's unbelievable. So tell me about the next steps of writing your book. Like, how do you... And you're not a writer, I'm assuming. So, you weren't.
I'm not a writer.
You weren't. You are now. You have a book.
I am now.
But how does that look? How does that work? How do you write a book?
You know, when I first, I mean, I read a lot of books and I read a lot of biographies and I read a lot of journeys of a lot of people. And I've always had like this knowing that I was going to write a book at one point in my life. And there's certain stories that I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about my grandfather's sacrifice that had to be in my book because that is about the foundation of my life and my lineage for that matter. And then I also want to talk about my father's journey with alcoholism and the consequences of alcoholism and having that in your life and also the consequences of the collateral damage of the family that's left behind because of that.
Yeah.
So those are things that I really want to talk about. So when I was called to write the book, I knew that this was my chance to talk about these things where I can help people that are coping through either the devastation of losing a family because of substance abuse, or helping somebody trying to reinvent themselves and find out how do I get started? What keeps me motivated?
Mm.
And that's when I knew this was the opportunity for me to write this book and put these stories in it.
How long did it take?
It didn't take me long, which is a shocking thing to me.
Yeah.
It took me about 3 to 6 months from the beginning to the end to go live.
Seems like a long time, but then I guess I know people that have been working on a book for 5 years, right?
For years, yeah. Exactly. That's what I had heard too.
Yeah.
But the reason it was so quick is because they gave me two options. George, you can either write the book or you can speak the book.
Mm.
And I was like, well, what do you mean speak the book? Mm. Yeah, we'll give you a template. We're going to ask you some questions. And basically, we're going to interview you.
Wow.
And we're going to give you a transcript of that interview.
Mm.
And that'll be a chapter.
That's very good.
It's okay, well, let's do that. So they gave me a template. It's almost like when you build a resume, it's a template.
Yeah.
Well, the format was similar, almost like writing a movie script.
Yeah.
Right? And then, they were asking me the questions, you know, and when I got the first transcript, I got so emotional.
Yeah.
Because my first chapter was done.
Yeah, wow.
And that's when I realized, oh my God, is this really this easy?
Yeah.
Yeah, George, this is how easy it is when you do the speaking of the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gives us a transcript and all we do is got to edit it for corrections on wording and whatnot.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, oh my God, okay. Wow. And then they're like, okay, we can do one a week. I said, no, I want to do two a week now.
Yeah.
So we did two chapters a week. This is why we were able to do it so fast.
Mm, mm.
Because I was so motivated and excited that I wanted to make sure that I didn't forget anything that I wanted to talk about and I wanted to put in a book.
Mm.
So I wanted to do it quick.
Wow.
Plus we were in the pandemic
of course.
And whatnot. So I wanted to make sure that if I died, my book was done.
That's amazing.
You know?
Because while I've been talking to you, what one thing I've got is this idea about perspective, right? And I think you talk about it really well. It's like, and also the fact you've been through what you've been through, you're a good person to take advice from because you've been there, right? And it sounds like you were at the end. I love doing this podcast because I was at the end. I was literally 6 years ago. I was at the end. And now I'm here and I'm growing and I'm living a better, more enriched life than I ever have since I've been born, right? And I apparently had to have gone through that shit in order for me to finally fucking wake up and realize like how to live and grow. Right. So it's really amazing hearing you talk about that. Can we quickly talk about the alcoholism side of your family? Was that your father? Did you say?
Yeah, that was my father. Yeah.
Was that rough?
That was extremely rough. I didn't know my father was an alcoholic until it was really late already.
Right.
When my father was 45 years old, I had to take him to a university here in Southern California. They're liver specialists, right? And the doctor looked at me and says, I need you to tell your dad that he has 6 months to live.
Oh, fuck.
This was at the age of 45.
Shit.
And I looked at my dad and I go, Dad, the doctor is telling me that you have 6 months to live. He didn't say anything. He was just in shock. He got up, walked out of the doctor's office. I walked out behind him. My younger sister was with me at the time as well. We walked out together. And it was that moment, walking to my car in the parking lot, that I was like, this story has to be told.
Bloody hell.
I need to talk about this. I need to put it somewhere in the newspaper, in the news, something.
Yeah.
I need to talk about substance abuse and the consequences of it. And I also need to talk about the collateral damage of what a family is going to go through because my family is going to experience something that we've never experienced before.
That's
unreal. And it's not fair to us, right?
Yeah.
And but because our faith was so strong and we believed in alternative medicine and natural medicine, we were able to give my father certain things and we were able to keep him for 8 more years.
Wow. I mean, 8 more years is great, but it's still that makes him 53 when he passed away, right?
He was exactly 53, but at that time, I was already a father.
Yeah.
When my daughter was born, my daughter became his favorite grandchild.
Yeah.
Not his first grandchild, but his favorite.
Yeah.
Because she was the first granddaughter.
Yeah.
So it changed my father's life. I saw a part of my father that I'd never seen ever before.
Yeah.
I saw him so alive.
Yeah.
But deep down, we knew that his days were numbered.
The damage had been done. Did you, not see him drinking heavily in those days leading up to him? I'm assuming the diagnosis was cirrhosis, was it, of the liver?
Correct. It was cirrhosis of the liver. But the thing is that we were so used to seeing my father
drinking,
coming home from work, drinking a beer or two, three beers or whatnot.
Yeah.
Family gatherings, like getting drunk.
Yeah.
But we thought, it's just a family gathering, right? Yeah. Didn't thinking much of, not knowing the damage that it does at a long term.
Of course.
We didn't understand that.
No, of course.
We understand it now.
Yeah.
But we didn't understand it back then.
Did he stop after the diagnosis then between age 45 and 53, or did he continue?
He did stop.
Mm.
And, but it was too late.
Yeah.
I mean, his legs were swollen up, his stomach was swollen up. They would drain the fluids.
Ugh.
They would go in there and they would do knots on certain arteries that were going to certain parts of the liver.
Oh my gosh.
Like they did a lot of work. They did a lot of work to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. I'm so sorry.
But it was just too late.
So how long ago was that then that you lost your father?
He passed in 2004.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's going to be 20 years already.
Yeah.
It's going to be 20 years already.
My father drank a lot. Somehow he lived till he was 80. I have no idea how that happened. I guess some people are different, right? I would say my dad drank every day for 40 years I was alive until he died. It's crazy.
What I noticed going back with my father is that when my family members drank, they wouldn't eat.
Ah. Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
So the food wouldn't expunge the alcohol.
Yeah.
It wouldn't absorb it.
Yeah. The body did instead.
I think that was
straight into the organs.
I think that was a downfall.
Oh my gosh.
I think that was a downfall. Now my father also only drank Budweiser.
Ah, interesting.
When my father got sick, all my family members switched to Bud Light.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
But so I was like, wait a minute. You see my father sick.
Yeah.
And you know his days are numbered.
Yeah.
So instead of quitting, you're going to downsize.
Yeah. I'm sorry for laughing, but that's funny, isn't it? It's like, that makes no sense at all.
It makes no sense.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, you should learn a lesson from him. And then you should also know that the thing that we're going to go through, your family could go through too.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
Because we're all family here.
Yeah. Yeah. Family means a lot to you, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the foundation of my life. I mean, I was raised so close to my grandparents and my parents and my first cousins.
Mm.
We were like brothers.
Mm, I love
and
that.
And sisters, not just cousins.
Yeah.
You know, when we see each other, because sometimes we don't see each other in months or a couple of years. When we see each other, oh my God, we hug each other and we hold each other like, you know, we missed each other. You know, it's just a beautiful thing that.
It's a wonderful thing to have a big family that all love each other like that. My family is scattered around the world. I have a huge family, but they're everywhere. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
And we try and connect with them as much as we possibly can, you know. So just to wrap up then, George, this is amazing. This episode has been wonderful. Your book is called?
Answer the Call.
And where can we find your book?
You can find it in my social media bios. You can follow me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active.
Brilliant.
At George_V_Gonzalez.
Yeah.
And you can actually download a free copy of my book.
Mm. So what we're going to do is we're going to have all of that information you just said on the show notes. So if you're listening to this episode, go to the show notes and you'll find all the links where you can find George and where you can find the download for the book and any social stuff so people can get in touch with you if they so desire. Because one would imagine people are going to resonate with this episode on a big level for two reasons: the family aspect, the health aspect, right? The whole immigration thing was fascinating as well. Obviously, I came from London over here and never thought I'd live in a different country. It really is quite extraordinary, isn't it? Like moving countries. But then obviously the alcoholism in the family, and then of course your accident, which is like, it's just a game changer, isn't it? Like you just never know. You never know what is around the next corner.
Now, another thing, I've always believed that it had a huge purpose on my life.
Mm.
And when I wrote the book, I was given access to connect all the dots leading all the way back to my younger years. So I want people to understand that each one of us has a life purpose.
Yeah.
And we're all being called to follow that life purpose.
I love that. I think it's easy for us to think that we don't, right? It's easy for every human to feel like a bit useless sometimes. Right. So it's about engaging and encouraging and cultivating that and nurturing that in the human spirit that's in everyone, isn't it? Because I know what it's like to have been lost and not feel like I had any purpose or worth or value whatsoever mm-hmm. to anybody, let alone myself. So it must yeah. feel quite good that you feel that way. You must feel quite energized.
Absolutely. I believe that God fills me with this powerful feeling because he wants me to share it with other people. Mm. I've had so many encounters with certain people that they've told me, George, I don't have a gift, I don't have a talent, and I yeah. definitely don't have a purpose.
Yeah.
And after my conversation with them, their perspective changes.
Yeah, that's it.
And now they're out there trying to build companies and services and whatnot, reinventing themselves and understanding that a hobby is not a hobby. Mm. A hobby is a gift or a talent. Mm. Find a way to monetize that because that might be yeah. your purpose.
Yeah, yeah. George V. Gonzalez, this has been an amazing episode. Thank you so much for joining me from sunny California, soon to be rainy California, if I'm not mistaken, this weekend. I'm in California as well, so yeah.
It rained two days ago. It's going to rain Saturday tomorrow.
Yeah, that's it. My kid's got a soccer match tomorrow, which might well get cancelled, so we'll see about that. It's been a pleasure, George. Stay in touch, and looking forward to getting your story out there.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you for having me.